Delighted that you're here this morning, and I hope you've brought your Bible with you and are eager to take that and study with us as we continue our study of things that we need to know or you need to know about marriage. We begin each evening, and our last two nights in our study, we've made the point that if you are planning to marry someday, there are some things you need to know about marriage. If you're married now, there's some things you need to know about marriage. And if you think you can have any influence on someone, be it your children or a brother or sister in the Lord, there are things you need to know if you're going to have influence on others about marriage. And we also raise the question each night, why do we need to have a good knowledge of that? Well, you're going to be asked questions about marriage. You're going to be asked questions about divorce. You're going to be asked about some advice you may give from time to time. You may try to convert someone. And in the process of converting them, you find out they're in their second or third marriage. What do you tell them? Those are questions that we need to know answers to. We need to influence and teach our children. And then one of the important points we've made each night is the fact that we need to know if the elders are making the right decision. And by that, we need to know, are they accepting people who are living in adultery? Or are they rejecting people that God would accept? And so we need to know if the right decisions are being made. So in the five studies, we're ready for the third of those. We're ready to look at who can marry and marriage and the bond. Just a little review of where we've been. On Friday, we talked about the Bible being our standard and our guide in the marriage. And furthermore, it is the standard that defines what we talk about, whether it be marriage or divorce or whatever the case may be. And then last evening, we talked about what is marriage and its purpose. There is confusion over those who can marry or what can marry, as we talked about last evening, what constitutes marriage, and then we talked about the purpose of marriage. So this morning, let's raise the question, who can marry? That's one question, and then we'll talk about the marriage and the bond. Why do we need to raise questions about who can marry? And why do we need to talk about the marriage and the bond? Well, first of all, I want to suggest that there's often a disconnect between Bible authority and the marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What do we mean by that? We talk about Bible authority, and we preach on Bible authority. We have Bible lessons in class on Bible authority. And perhaps the first thing we think about is we see, well, you know, that applies to worship, whether or not we can use instrumental music or not. And we're right about that. That applies to the work of the church, whether or not we can support something that is an organization outside the local church. And we're right about that. But we may not do much thinking about how that question of Bible authority fits with marriage, divorce, and remarriage. That's as much a question of Bible authority as any other issue. There are many people who are remarrying who have no right to marry. So we need to know who has the right to marry, who has that biblical right. There's a common thought that if one is divorced, they can remarry. So you raise the question, are they eligible for marriage? Do they have a scripture right? Well, sure, they have a right to be married because they are divorced. And that's because they're confusing the marriage and the bond. We'll see more about that in a moment. And there is this confusion over marriage and the bond of equating the two. We talked about that briefly last night. We want to expand upon that this morning. A number of years ago, early in my study of the subject of marriage, divorce, and remarriage, I went to two well-known preachers who lived here in the Louisville area, which is where I was living at the time, and asked them the question, can you give me some advice of how to approach marriage, divorce, and remarriage and make it simple and understandable? So I went to one, and he said, I tell you, the best thing to do is make a list of those who are given a right to marry. Just get you a piece of paper and write down, this one has the right, and make sure you have Bible authority for that, book, chapter, and verse for that. And then list another one, and you have book, chapter, and verse. And if somebody wants to add even another one down the line, make sure they give you book, chapter, and verse. I found that to be the simplest thing to do, he said. And I found out Connie Adams was right about that. Sounds like his approach, doesn't it? Just a simple, do you have Bible authority? All right? I went to another preacher here in the area, and I asked him, and he said, if you can ever establish a clear distinction in the marriage and the bond, you'll be able to answer most of the questions on divorce and remarriage. I told Gene Frost, that's too simple. That doesn't work. And so I argued with him a little about that. That's you're oversimplifying. That won't answer most of the questions. And I studied on that, and I studied on that, and I began to see the distinction in the marriage and the bond. And I was seeing then I was answering most of the questions on divorce and remarriage. And most of the error on divorce and remarriage was because of the confusion of the marriage and the bond. I went back to Gene and said, "You're right. I understand that." Those two approaches helped me understand clearly the issue of marriage, divorce, and remarriage. And so we want to talk about those two areas in our study this morning. Let's raise the question of who can marry. Let's open our Bibles. We're looking for Bible authority. And before we begin the list, let's go back to this principle of Bible authority and how it applies here. In 1 Peter 4 and verse 11, "If any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God. Let him speak as the sayings of God." I have the responsibility of standing before you, of making sure that whatever I say, I can cite book, chapter, and verse for it. The elders here are responsible for that teaching, and that means if I'm teaching something where I cannot give book, chapter, and verse, it's their responsibility to correct that. Because we need to give book, chapter, and verse for all that we say and all that we teach. If any man speak, let him speak as the oracles of God. Do you know what? That applies to you as well as you talk to your neighbor or your children or a fellow Christian, and you tell them you have a right or you don't have a right. You need to make sure you have book, chapter, and verse, because you also must speak as the sayings of God. Furthermore, 2 John 9 says we must abide within the confines of the doctrine of Christ. And if we go outside the rim of the doctrine of Christ, we no longer have fellowship with God. So I'm learning from those two passages, we must have Bible authority. So the question is, always is, and always will be, where is the book and the chapter and the verse? So if someone says this person has a right to remarry, ask for the book, the chapter, and the verse, because Bible authority applies. Pay close attention to the fact that you may have the right to marry, but the one you marry must also have that right. You may never have been married before. And you're marrying someone who's now ready for their second or third marriage. They may be divorced. The question is, you may have that right, but do they have the right to marry? And that is as much important question applying to Bible authority as anything else. Let's notice Hebrews chapter 7 and verse 14. Concerning our Lord, the text says, "He arose out of the tribe of Judah, of which tribe Moses spoke nothing concerning priesthood." What I learned from that is the silence of God does not authorize. In other words, the Bible does not say not to have instrumental music. That's true. But it doesn't authorize it. So the fact that the Bible is silent about that doesn't give us authority. That doesn't serve as permission, but a prohibition. The same thing is true with church-sponsored recreation. The Bible is silent about that. That doesn't authorize it. So also when we have someone, we say, you know, the Bible doesn't forbid. It doesn't say they can't remarry. Well, where is the Bible authority? Because the silence of God does not authorize. So let's begin making our list. Who has the right to marry? Well, first of all, the one who has never been married. Well, we understand that, and I can make that statement, and no one here would question that. But let's look at the book, chapter, and the verse. In Matthew chapter 19, verses 4 and 5, Jesus answered, "Have you not read that he which made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and be joined or cleave unto his wife?" Well, that's enough to establish our point. We studied those passages a little more in detail last evening. But here is a case where they've never been married, and they have a right to be married. Furthermore, Hebrews 13 and verse 4, marriage is honorable. Marriage is honorable and the bed undefiled. 1 Corinthians 7 and in verse 9, it is better to marry than to burn with desire. Perhaps the passage that would tell us as much about that as any would be 1 Corinthians 7 and 28, where a virgin, if she marries, that means she's never been married, she hasn't sinned. So those who have never been married have the right to get married. All right, let's add another to that. One whose mate is dead has the right to remarry. And let's give the book, the chapter, and the verse for it. Romans 7 and in verse 3 said, "So then if, while her husband lives, she be married to another man, she shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she'll be called no adulteress, though she be married to another man." She was married to one. He died. Now she is free to marry another man. So she has every right because the husband is dead, to marry someone else. All right, we're all in agreement so far. Let's list a third category. And the one who puts away his mate for fornication, his or her mate for fornication. And we're going to give closer attention to Matthew 19, 9 in our next study. But let's go to Matthew 19 and verse 9 to see our point. Jesus said, "Whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. Whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery." So the one who puts away his mate or her mate for the cause of fornication has the right to remarry. Let's list a fourth category. Those who are reconciling. Now, we gave a passing attention to 1 Corinthians 7 last evening. And this is a case of an unscriptural divorce. Here's a man who puts away his wife, or a wife who puts away her husband, and there is no scriptural grounds for that. Let's notice that at verse 10. "To the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord, a wife is not to depart from her husband." Now, we talked about the word depart meaning divorce and gave our evidence of that in two studies, both on Friday and Saturday evening. But be that as it may, that refers to divorce. And I know that because it leaves her in an unmarried state, verse 11. Now, verse 11 says, "But if she does depart," what if they do divorce? "Let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband." So here is a couple that have no right to divorce. They divorce anyway. They have a right now to be reconciled. And here's the Bible passage that so teaches. Now let's start adding some more to that. Let's add point E and F. And I'm not going to add that because I can't find that in the scriptures. But if you want to, make sure you find the book and the chapter and the verse. That's one of the simplest approaches to divorce and remarriage. Who has the right? Where is the book, the chapter, and the verse? Let's start making a list, just like what do we offer in worship? Well, I can find singing. I can find the Lord's Supper. I can find praying because I can find book, chapter, and verse. Someone wants to add handling snakes or counting beads. All right, go ahead and add that, but make sure you find the book, the chapter, and the verse for that. So where is the Bible authority? Who has the right to marry? One who's never been married, one whose mate is dead, one who puts away their mate for fornication, and those who are reconciling. They have the right to marry. Now let's spend the rest of our time this morning talking about the marriage and the bond. And I want you to watch carefully and listen closely, because if you can see the distinction in the marriage and the bond, that they are not the same. We've talked about that twice already. We introduced the idea on Friday, and we talked a little more on Saturday. We're going to spend more time this morning now, the rest of our time, talking about the distinction in the marriage and the bond. If you can see that distinction, you will see quite often that the era that is being taught on divorce and remarriage confuses that and always makes them the same thing. And we'll give you some evidence of how that works here in just a moment. So let's talk about that confusion first of all. Where this confusion takes place concerning the marriage and the bond. Here is a case of Jack and Jill. There may be someone named Jack here or Jill. I have no reference to anybody that I know. I'll take that from the nursery rhyme. Jack and Jill went up the hill. All right? That's why I use those expressions and everything I've written on divorce and remarriage. So here's Jack and Jill. They were scripturally married, and Jack divorces her. And let's make it some cause other than fornication so we know what we're talking about. He divorces her because she will not cook for him. Now, everyone recognizes that's not a scriptural divorce. All right? It is argued that they're divorced only in the eyes of men. They're still really married in the eyes of God. We talked about that last evening. Now, follow this. Some are arguing that, okay, they are unscripturally divorced. They're not really divorced. They're still really married. That's because they're making the marriage and the bond one and the same thing. They equate the two. Let's go further now. Jack now goes out and marries Susan. That is an unscriptural marriage, and it is argued that since it is adultery, we all agree with that, they're not really married. He's not really divorced from her, and he's not really married to her. They're married, that is, Jack and Susan are married only in the eyes of men, but they're not married in the eyes of God. You say, well, okay, I don't see a big problem with that. Well, let's go a little bit further. Let's talk about this confusion over the marriage and the bond. Almost all error, not every single error, but many of the errors that are taught on divorce and remarriage take marriage and the bond and they equate the two and they make them the same thing. They have to make their position work. They have to do that. They take marriage and the bond and make them the same thing. The idea is if they're no longer married, then they're no longer bound. If they are bound, then they are still married because they have to make them one and the same. Marriage and the bond is the same thing in their mind. You'll hear this contrasting language of being married in the eyes of God versus married in the eyes of men, or divorced in the eyes of God versus divorced in the eyes of men. So they talk about marriage and divorce that God approves. Oh, that's in the eyes of God and it's real. But marriage and divorce that God does not approve of, that's only in the eyes of men and it's not real. So you go to someone, you say, I heard that Jack and Jill got a divorce. Well, in the eyes of men, but they're still really married in the eyes of God. See, they're equating the marriage and the bond. They have to make that work. Now, let's establish the fact that there is a difference. Is there a difference in the marriage and the bond? So let's go to Romans 7. If you don't see any other passage in our study this morning, I want you to get Romans 7, 2, and 3. Romans 7, 2, and 3. I understand that in Romans 7, there is the discussion of the law of Moses and the separation from the law of Moses, and marriage is given as an illustration of that. I understand that. But the illustration is still a true illustration and still teaches truth. Because some have argued, well, that you can't take this passage because it's talking about the law and he just uses marriage as an illustration. Did he take an erroneous illustration to illustrate the truth? Or did he take a true illustration? What he says about marriage is still true. And so let's read the passage. For a woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband so long as he liveth. But if the husband be dead, she is loosed from the law of her husband. So then if, while her husband liveth, she be married to another man, she should be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she's free from the law, so that she is no adulteress, though she be married to another man. Now let's take a look at the passage. We'll read it several times more. I want you to notice that in this passage, as we go back and read it, a woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband. She was bound to her first husband. The same way you are in your marriage, if it's scriptural, you're bound to your mate. Woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband. But I want you to watch this now. This same woman that's bound to her first husband, he's still alive. She might be married to another man and not bound to him. Let's read the passage again. Go back to verse 2. For a woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband so long as he lives. Now then, here are three important words. Verse 3, so then if. That is because this bond is intact. So then if, while her husband lives, she be married to another man, she's called an adulteress. Why is this adultery? Because she's bound to the first husband. Let me footnote here. If this were in writing, this would be footnote number 1. So drop down and look at your footnote now. The footnote that I'm giving you is, this is the only passage that tells me why a subsequent marriage is adultery. You say, well, Matthew 19:9 says, the man puts away his wife and marries another, commits adultery. Yes, because God said so, but God, he didn't explain why. There's not another passage that'll explain why. So you're going to have a question come up in your mind at some point. I wonder if this is adultery, if this marriage is adultery. Find and see if you can see a bond somewhere. This is the only passage in all the New Testament that tells me why a subsequent marriage is adultery, and that's because there's a bond intact. I want you to get that point. For the last 30 years, well, I get phone calls all the time, people saying, we're studying your material on divorce and remarriage. I've got a question. And I can stop and tell them what the question is. It's the same question every time. And the answer is, Romans 7 is the only passage that tells me why a subsequent marriage is adultery. That's an important point. Why is this adultery? Because there's a bond intact. Now, what if he dies? There's no longer a bond. That's why she's free to marry this man. What if she puts him away for fornication? Matthew 7 said there's no bond now because she's got a right to remarry. That's why she can marry this man now if he's committed adultery and she's put him away for that. But if it's for any other cause, she's still bound to him. Romans 7, I know you're tired of hearing it, but you're going to hear it again, is the only passage that tells me why a subsequent marriage is adultery. Because there's a bond intact. So then if points to that bond of verse 2. All right, let's get back. Now, we're through with the footnote. Let's go back to our text now. And the point we're making is this woman was bound to one and married to another. So there is a difference in the marriage and the bond. She's married to him, but she's bound to another man. There's a difference in the marriage and the bond. I want to suggest to you that this is what the world thinks of marriage, divorce and remarriage. Their idea is that all that's involved between Jack and Jill is they're married to each other. And if for any reason they decide they want to end that marriage, they've also ended the bond. And now they're both free to remarry. Isn't that how the world thinks? Because, yeah, I've got a right to marry. Because, see, my divorce is final now. It'll be final on a certain day. Now that it's final, I'm free to remarry. Why? Because the marriage is over. They equate the marriage and the bond. I want to tell you, some of our brethren think the same way. They think all that's involved is the marriage, and they equate the marriage and the bond. If the marriage is over, the bond is over. Let's go back to Romans 7. If you've turned from that, go back to Romans 7. There's more to that. A woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband. See, there's more involved in the marriage. There's the bond. A woman is bound by God's law. God's law of one mate for life that obligates you to your mate and restrains you from all others. That's what we saw from Genesis 2. He likewise is bound by that same law to his wife. It obligates him to her and restrains him from all others. So then if they decide to end this marriage, the problem is there's still a bond intact. That's why they can't just divorce and remarry at will. It's because there is this bond intact. There's a distinction in the marriage and in the bond. Now let's define what we're talking about. When we talk about marriage, as we dealt with last evening, is a relationship entered into by agreement. Remember, we talked about agreement being one of the conditions. And ratified by civil law or society. If you weren't here then last evening, go back and find that lesson and look for the evidence of that. Now, what is the bond? The bond is a covenant with God that joins you to your mate. That's what Matthew 19:6 is about. That a man who, in Matthew 19, verse 6, God has joined them together. That's the bond that's being talked about. Romans 7, 2 and 3, bound by the law to her husband. 1 Corinthians 7:39 talks about the same principle. And so it is that a scriptural marriage is where it involves three. It involves not only a covenant with your mate, but a covenant with your God, Malachi 2 and in verse 14. Now, let's go further. I want us to see that it's possible to be bound to one and married to another. We've already made that point, but I want to go through that again. We're trying to see the distinction. Romans 7, a woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband. Romans 7, verse 2. So then if, while her husband lives, she be married to another man, she should be called an adulteress. Are you seeing there's a difference in the marriage and the bond? Are you seeing a difference in the marriage and the bond? Now, I want to suggest to you that the Bible uses terminology of a yoke or joining. They're yoked together. Matthew 19, verses 4 through 6. And it's possible for one to be released from the yoke or the bond and another still bound. We just saw that in Romans 7. And as you would take two oxen and yoke them together, could you release one and one still be within the yoke? Certainly so. And that's what Matthew 19 in verse 9 is saying, that Jill puts Jack away, or Jack puts Jill away for the cause of fornication. She doesn't have a right to marry. She's still bound, according to Matthew 19, 9. But Jack is free. But the idea, if you make marriage and the bond one and the same, The terminology that those guys who argue that the guilty party can remarry, they talk about when you cut one free, you cut them all free. I've read and read and read and read and read those debates from those guys in their articles, and every one of them illustrates it this way. You tie two people together with a rope. If you cut the rope, you've released both of them. You handcuff two people together, a man and a woman, and if you release one, you've released the other. And so the idea is if one is released, both are released. In other words, if the marriage ends, the bond ends. Every one of their arguments make the marriage and the bond one and the same thing. But if there's a distinction in the marriage and the bond, Jill is still bound even though she's no longer married to Jack. We saw that in Romans 7, 2 and 3. Now let's talk about marriage is marriage and divorce is divorce. Now you understand where we were going last night. If there is a distinction in the marriage and the bond, then marriage is marriage and divorce is divorce. We talked last evening about how married, one who is married, cannot be said to be unmarried. Have you ever walked up to someone and you said, well, are you married now? Well, yeah, I'm married. Well, not really married. I'm married, but I'm not married. Well, which is it? Are you married or you're not married? Well, I'm married in the eyes of men, but not in the eyes of God. No, are you married or you're not married? How does the Bible use that terminology? We noticed last evening, and I don't apologize for repeating this, because now we're lacing this in the context of the marriage and the bond distinction. The Bible uses the term marriage to refer to those that God approves of. When God approves of the relationship, then God calls it a marriage. Hebrews 13 and in verse 4, marriage is honorable. I know God approves it because he said it's honorable. Matthew 19 and verse 9, when a man puts away his wife for fornication and marries another, he doesn't commit adultery. Calls it marriage, doesn't he? God approves of it. Well, what about 1 Corinthians 7 and in verse 9? If you marry, you haven't sinned. Or what if the virgin marries? She hasn't sinned. God approves of it. He calls it marriage. We're all on the same page. But what if God does not approve of it? We are told today by some of our brethren that no, that's not really a marriage. It's marriage only in the eyes of men, not in the eyes of God. Let's see what God called it. Mark 6, when Herod had married Herodias, John said, it's not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. It's not lawful. That means God didn't approve of it. What God called it? For he had married her, the text says. Remember that? He had married her. What the text called it? Or what about Romans 7, verse 3? A woman hath an husband bound by the law to her husband. So then if, while her husband lives, she be married to another man, she's called an adulteress. I know God doesn't approve because it's adultery, but she was married to another man. Go back to Matthew 19, 9. Man who puts away his wife and marries another commits adultery. The text says he married her. Calls it adultery. Now, we can say that because there is a distinction in the marriage and the bond. God may not approve of it. They're not bound, but they're married. What God called that. Now let's go further. Let's try that on with divorce. When God approves of it, what does he call it? He calls it a putting away. A man who puts away his wife and marries another, if it's for the cause of fornication, he doesn't commit adultery. When God approves of it, he calls it putting away. What if God doesn't approve of it? What did he call it? He called it the same thing in the same verse and used that phrase only one time. Same thing. Only one time. We talked about this last evening, and I want you to get this point. If you weren't here, then pay attention to 1 Corinthians 7 and verses 10 and 11. That an unscriptural marriage leaves one in an unmarried state. Now, if you equate the marriage and the bond and make them the same thing, you can't say that. I know I'm going, I'm repeating some things, but I want you to get that point. If you equate the marriage and the bond and make them one and the same, you cannot agree with 1 Corinthians 7, 10 and 11. Now let's see what the text says. Now to the married I command, yet not I, but the Lord, a wife is not to depart from her husband. The word means divorce. It's the same word translated divorce in verse 15 in some translations. Same word translated put asunder, Matthew 19, 6. And furthermore, it leaves her in an unmarried state, verse 11. So let's see what the text says. But and if she does depart, that is something forbidden, verse 10, so it means it's unscriptural, then let her remain unmarried or be reconciled to her husband. You see, this unscriptural divorce left her in an unmarried state. So the text says the unscriptural divorce left them in an unmarried state. It didn't say this unscriptural divorce, one who is unscripturally divorced, should remain married because they're still really married in the eyes of God. That's not what the text says. So there is a distinction in the marriage and the bond. Now let's go to Matthew chapter 19 and in verse 9. I found this one interesting. I mentioned Brother Frost earlier. He said, I've been wanting for years to make a chart that looks like this, and so I made the chart he always wanted to make at his urging. Here's the point from Matthew chapter 19 and verse 9. When people talk about this marriage that's real and marriage that's not real, divorce or putting away that's real and not real, or in the eyes of God versus in the eyes of men, the question is, when Jesus used the phrase put away, how did he mean that? Was it real or was it not real? Let's read the text. And I say unto you, whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. That's the first independent clause. Now, when Jesus used that phrase put away, that was he talking about he really did put her away or only in the eyes of men? How do you mean that? Because from that one phrase, I learned that a man who puts away his wife for a cause other than fornication, when he marries another, he commits adultery. That's unscriptural. From that same phrase where he used that phrase put away, that term put away, I learned this also. A man who puts away his wife for fornication when he remarries, there is no adultery. So whatever he meant one time, he meant also in the other. So when Jesus used the word put away, was it real? Oh, yeah, it was real. Well, then it's real in both cases. Oh, wait a minute, I'm confused. It was not real. It's only not. Well, then it's unreal in both cases. Because I only used the phrase one time. Which way is it? When I ask that question publicly and I ask it in print, you know what the answer is? They ignore it. And that's because you can't answer that question and equate the marriage and the bond. You can't equate the marriage and the bond and come through this text and say, here's what Jesus means by that, and be consistent. Now, when you see the distinction in the marriage and the bond, you can be consistent. He means really putting away in both cases. This is really a divorce, even though it's unscriptural. And this one that is scriptural, it's really a divorce. God approves of one. He doesn't approve of the other. And so there is a distinction in the marriage and the bond. I want you to see that. Now, let's spend the rest of our time talking about four situations that are possible with reference to being bound. Four situations possible with reference to being bound in the lesson of the years. First of all, it's possible to be bound and scripturally married. Hopefully, if you are married, you're in that circumstance. That you are bound and you're scripturally married. That's like Romans 7 and verse 2. A woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband, so long as he lives. So if you're married, hopefully you're in that circumstance, that you have a scriptural right to be married and you're bound to them. That's one situation you could be in. Here's another. It's possible to be bound and unmarried. 1 Corinthians 17, 11, we just saw that. That if she does depart, she divorced him. She needs to now remain unmarried. She's unmarried, she's not married, but she's still bound, isn't she? So it's possible to be bound and unmarried. All right? There's a third possibility. You could be bound and unmarried while the other mate is free to remarry. Whosoever shall put away his wife, except it be for fornication, and shall marry another, committeth adultery. And whoso marrieth her which is put away doth commit adultery. So it's possible to be bound and unmarried while the other mate is free. If you've been put away for the cause of adultery, you're bound. You're not free. The text says you cannot remarry, but the other mate's free to remarry. They're free, you're still bound, but you're not married anymore. Here's the fourth possibility. To be bound to your first mate while unscripturally married to another. That was what Romans 7 was about. A woman which hath a husband is bound by the law to her husband. So then if, while her husband lives, she be married to another man, she should be called an adulteress. Now what have we seen this morning? We haven't taken a ton of material to go through, but I want you to see two major points. One is, who has the right to marry? Bible authority applies here. Let's take book, chapter, and verse and make application of that. That's one point. The other point, I want you to see the distinction in the marriage and the bond. And you say, well, I see that distinction. Well, then you watch for things that you think that doesn't sound just right. And you watch and see if they don't equate the marriage and the bond. They'll have to most of the time. They'll make the marriage and the bond one and the same to make their position work. The world equates the two. Some of our brethren equate the two. And see that distinction in the marriage and the bond. And you say, I see it, but I don't see how it applies to other areas. You watch for that. We'll talk more about that in our next study. And we'll talk about the distinction in the marriage and the bond, how that applies to some of the erroneous views that have been advocated. So what we've seen this morning is who can marry and the distinction in the marriage and the bond. There may be one or more present who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're subject in any way, we hope and trust that you'll come while together we stand and while we sing.